Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hey, it's me and it's you. How are you? What's been going on since I last spoke to you, which would have been about, is that five weeks ago, 6 weeks ago? Yes, I have been travelling all around the country, actually, since then. I went on tour during pretty much all of March, and it was amazing. And if you were there, thank you. I adored it. I always love doing my tours, and I swear, since the very first tour I ever did, they're kind of always quite a special event. I don't go on tour every year. I do gigs every year, but I don't go on tour every year. And this tour was the first one in 3 years, and it just felt really special. And I think that was partly as well down to the fact that I've never done a tour that's as personal as the one I just did, because ordinarily you release an album and then you tour that album and it's kind of part of the album cycle. But this tour existed coming out of what happened during lockdown and the kitchen discos. So I wasn't promoting anything. It was just the other half of a promise that Richard and I made to ourselves when the discos were happening, that we thought wouldn't it be amazing to do this in real life with real people all under one roof having a disco together. So being on stage and bringing a set around that literally recreated my home was really quite bizarre, but really glorious. And everybody came with pure excitement and positivity and joy. And there were lots of sparkly people I was looking out on every night, and I just adored it. So yeah, if you were there, thank you. And I'll tell you what I also miss, now that I've come back, I miss my horse, because during lockdown, I impulse bought a life-size resin horse, which I then took on tour. So even though I bought it during lockdown, I didn't meet it actually until the first day of the tour, which was in Birmingham. And then I would start my gigs sitting on this horse. And it turns out I love starting a gig on a horse. So I don't know what I'm going to do now when I don't get to start a gig sitting on a horse. I might just have to do that always. I've been to 2 gigs in the last couple of weeks and I thought, great gig, but where's the horse? You know, I now feel a horse is pretty intrinsic. Anyway, I am now back with, crazily enough, series 7 of this podcast. So I guess we're not far off the podcast 2-year birthday, She's gone by, I was going to say quickly. It hasn't really. It's been quite a crazy time, hasn't it, the last couple of years? But it does feel quite significant, and I'm very excited to be back with it and having all my lovely conversations again. So in the spirit of trying to be organised, I've recorded, how many have I done already? 4. I've got another couple next week that I'm doing, just trying to pepper the month with it so that I get a lovely selection for you. And I started with someone I wanted to speak to for ages, and I suppose it's a little bit surprising in a way that I've never crossed paths with Jules Oliver before, because I've done a couple of festivals that have involved her husband, Jamie, and it just wouldn't have been that surprising if Jules Oliver and I had not seen each other in some festival field somewhere at some point, but that never happened. So I sort of watched her from afar, and she has the same number of children as me, so she's got 5 as well, and that, as you'll know if you've been listening to many of these, it's quite a thing in itself, because actually the majority of people I speak to have not got as many kids as me. You know, it's just something I've noticed. in fact, I think I've only spoken to one person who's had more. Anyway, so Jules has got 5. They are the same as mine, but like a little bit older. So I think her eldest is now 21, I'm going to say, down to the youngest, who I think is around 6. I'm pretty sure Jules will clarify all of this when we're chatting. And I love, love, love the range that she does for mother care, the little bird range. It really speaks to me. As a child of the 80s, I was born in 1979, and the whole range is based on late 70s, early 80s clothing. So it was in mother care, and it's now moved to Next, happily. So you can still get the clothes. And I genuinely think they're brilliant. I mean, if they did a lot of those little terry toweling, brightly coloured rompers in adult size, I'd have a wardrobe of them, quite frankly. Very partial to a little play suit. But I've just bought a rainbow one for Mickey, which he'll look swell in when the sun shines, which I'm sure it will soon. So yes, Jules and I spoke all things big families. We spoke lockdown, entertainment stuff, because obviously we did discos here, but she and Jamie did a cooking programme from home with their kids involved. We talked about having a similar inability to say no to the idea of making our family bigger, even though we know that's kind of loopy because the family's already huge. And she was very open about how much she's wanted a 6th baby, which I really appreciated her honesty, actually. And she also speaks honestly about the times when it's not worked out and her miscarriages, which I know has been a really helpful conversation to have for lots of people as well. So without me waffling on any longer, I will hand over to Jules and I. And it was lovely to speak to her. But above all that, it's really lovely to be reunited with you. So thank you for finding me here. And welcome to Spinning Plates Series 7. Oh, my goodness, that's crazy. See you in a minute. I was really looking forward to speaking to you because I feel like we could just spend all the time just sort of having stories go back and forth of being mothers of 5. And actually, you're the first person I've spoken to who is a fellow mother of 5.
It's so true. It's exactly what it is. And there aren't many, actually. There's mothers of 4. Yeah. Aren't mothers of 5. Are you 5 boys?
I am 5 boys.
So that's also something new to me as well.
Yeah, and I feel like when I had 4 kids, I felt like I was still quite a big, small family, and then 5 was like a small, big family.
Yeah,
you've sort of gone
absolutely
into like sprawling territory.
Yeah, it's hardcore. It's really hardcore, but I still want to do more.
Yes, what is that about? Because I totally relate to that.
Do you?
Yeah, I always knew I was not, like people say to me, you're going to have any more, and I can't form the sentence, no. It just sort of like can't come out my mouth.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if that's because I'm getting older and I feel a bit midlifey. So I want to feel I can still produce a child, but I think it's more than that. I just don't feel done. I desperately want to feel done, but I just don't. But yeah, I'm going to have to live with that, I think.
I totally get it. And I think I've always said when I had my 5th, I said, you know, I probably won't have another one. That was the way I kind of found a way to, because people look so shocked. People have quite strong ideas.
Yeah, yeah. Like you're a weirdo. But thing is, they all fit in quite nicely. And they're also quite good ages. So it's not like I have 5 all at once. I have 3 really at the moment. And the other 2, although mentally it's quite draining. But, you know, it's doable. I love
it. You have the same gap as well from top to bottom as I do, because you've got 14 years, haven't you?
Yes, so the eldest is nearly 20, 19, second one, and then it goes 12, 11, and then River 5. What are your ones?
The youngest is 3, my eldest will be 18 in April, and then I've got a newly 13, nearly 10, and 6. Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like to have 5 boys, I have to say. I know it is very different, but I can't imagine what it... I mean, it must be just quite noisy.
I always say 5 of anything, really. I mean, I think, and I don't know if you agree with this, but I think in a big family, kids tend to have this ability to sort of find the thing that hasn't really been done too much of before and then go for that.
Yeah.
So I think in this little society, they kind of, it's like foam or something. They sort of fill the gaps of what's not been done.
Yeah,
so I think it's quite a spectrum, really. So I have some noisy ones and some not so noisy ones, really.
Yeah, true. Yeah, exactly the same as me. Exactly the same. But all wonderful.
It is all wonderful, and it's a lot going on. And I did wonder. So the first thing I want to speak to you about was Little Bird, which is a huge part of our lives. And so you've been doing a new range, is that right?
Yeah. So
new collection.
Mother Care ended, and during lockdown, Next appeared, which is amazing for me. So it was kind of something to do whilst we were kind of bored, I suppose. And then it was all online. So we designed all online, which is kind of, I still think, is a bit crazy. But now obviously we can get together and we can feel and see and touch. But it's just kind of gone really well. It's just sort of picked up where Mother Care left, and it's probably doing even better. So I'm really happy with it.
That's phenomenal. And I think we also want to raise a sort of virtual toast to Mother Care, because that was something from my childhood. And I think for me, who's got absolutely loads of Little Bird clothes, it all kind of tied in with my own childhood, my own association with seeing that on the high street, and then all the colours and the fabrics.
Yeah.
So I'm thrilled that Next are taking it on, because I knew it wouldn't go away, by the way. Even when Mother Care went, I was like, Little Bird
We straight away were like, we're not going anywhere. We said, we just have to work out where we're going to go. But, you know, we were very lucky. We were in good places. It wasn't a problem. But Next just seemed like a really good fit. And they seemed to do really well with the kids' clothing. So, yeah, it worked really well.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And presumably that's the sort of stuff you wore when you were small too.
Completely. And all the stuff, I've got pictures of us, myself in Mother Care and my sisters. I've even got, we raided Mum's wardrobe and all her kind of old trunks, and then we just basically ripped them all off, and they're all basically half Mother Care. So now we've kind of run out of stuff to do, so we've got to think. We've gone a little bit 80s, we've gone a little bit, you know, we just keep jumping, but it's quite easy. I love it.
It is fun, and it's also quite a rich aesthetic, isn't it, that whole thing? The palette is so recognisable, I think.
Yeah.
Those primary colours that you get in the sort of 70s and early 80s. It's such an instinctive thing, just when you put the two things next to each other and you go, oh yeah, I remember that from when I was small. And I think that
completely,
when you're a kid as well, that the way things feel, like if it's like, I don't know, velour, or it's got like a felt bit on the front, like you're so sort of connected to the way your clothes feel when you're little.
Exactly. It's sparkly. We wanted to reenact the sweatshirts that had like the sparkly kind of, I don't know, I had one with like dinosaurs kissing, but it was like, it was horrible, but also beautiful pink with like a... Next weren't too sure, but one day, we'll see.
And just for you personally, how sort of significant is it that you're now a boss of this incredibly successful clothing line? Is that something you always envisaged yourself doing?
Not really. I was just thinking kids, mum, everything quite kind of normal. I was just really pleased to stumble upon something that I was quite good at, and I understood, and I didn't really think about this as being sort of a future thing. I'd like to do loads of other things. I just don't know what. I want to be a midwife. I want to go back to school and do politics. I don't know what I want to do. I'm everywhere all the time, but this is quite nice just to keep me quiet. It keeps me going. So I do enjoy doing it.
That's I mean, you just mentioned quite diverse things there, midwifery and politics. So how does that manifest in your world, those
passions? I have no idea. I think midwifery would be something I've dreamed of. I don't know why I missed it. I stupidly went into modelling, which is the worst thing, and I think I just missed that boat. And now I kind of keep saying to my girls, please, or my sons, please be a midwife. Not interested at the moment. So I don't know. That's just feel like that's something I'd love to do. And everyone keeps saying, it's not too late, but I don't know. I don't know what to... I just want to do lots of different things, but I got to calm down and just kind of... I'm quite happy as I am, but there's lots of nice things, I think, left to do that I want to try.
Yeah. No, I don't think being looking outside yourself and wanting things to evolve and having momentum means that you're not feeling good about where you are. And in fact, some ways, feeling like you can explore those bits of your mind is a sign that you've kind of got lots of life around you. You know, there's so much vitality, isn't there, when you're
there's excitement, isn't there?
An ever-evolving family.
Yeah, exactly. It's just exciting. It's just exciting to sit down and think about what you'd like to do, even if you never do it. I'm with a husband. Obviously, my husband thinks about something, then does it. So it's quite stressful. So he says, write a book. And I think, yeah. Whereas he'll start writing a book, whereas I'll just think about it until I'm 80. But I like the idea of thinking about things and possibly. No pressure. No pressure, please, but possibly.
Well, I mean, talking about your husband, and it's relevant not so much because he's in the public eye, although obviously that's a lot of why, you know, people would know your family a bit, I suppose, alongside your clothing. But I think also because I always imagine that being married to someone where their vocation is so much part of their life, that that takes up a lot of space in the family too.
Yeah.
So how easy is it for you to find these spaces for yourself? Are you quite good at that?
Yeah, I'm quite alone now. I love dropping the children off and being, I like to go for coffees with friends, but as soon as I've done the coffee, I'm back out with the dog. I love to go for walks. I love nature. I don't know if it's just my age, but I'm obsessed with nature. So I find we live in a very normal household. I don't find any of Jamie's outside work coming into kind of the home life, apart from when we have to do filming, which we all dread, but we do to support him. It's kind of, but that's his world, but we don't mind popping into it. But apart from that, it doesn't really, it's just a normal family, very normal at home. Doesn't feel like his world encroaches on ours at all.
No, I suppose it's just that when, in a good way, I suppose, when someone does something that they're passionate about. I mean, for me, I'm married to a musician, so that's got that same sort of thing where it's kind of, you know, and the hours can be, you know, not conventional, and sometimes you'll be very sort of distracted and focused and in that world. And yeah, it is. It becomes normal because it's the world we know and we don't know any different. But I mean, sometimes, I don't know, I think this is a huge generalisation here, but I think Richard has always been much better at giving himself permission to let that completely take over his headspace. Mm. Whereas when I've got the kids, I sort of realised this actually hugely during lockdown. I kind of, because I have my work outside of the house mainly, I make sure I'm incredibly accessible to the kids at home. Mm. So I never really had my work here until I had to have my work here, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So how do you separate your five, your, you know, your children with your work? How do you do it?
Well, it used to be going elsewhere, really. So as soon as I'd go to a studio or I'd go on tour, that was where I could really just go and kind of unfurl all of that.
Yeah.
And then when I was home, I always felt like it's not my children's choice that I had five, and it's not my children's choice that I do what I do for a living. Mm. So whilst I'm happy to set a good example of doing something you love and getting much pleasure from it and working for a living and all those things, I also didn't want them to feel, I don't know, threatened by it, I suppose. Is that the right word?
Yeah, well, they feel they must come first, especially, well, mine do. They've got to be there. Or I've got to be there at every single possible moment. And, you know, I'm not always, but I am always around. James says, you always make yourself available. You know, you need to be a bit more, go to London, go see friends. I think, well, I kind of promised I'd be back for the school run. My 13-year-old's put a lot of pressure on me, which is ridiculous. But it kind of feels natural to be there rather than in London or doing something else. Whereas with Jamie, probably like your husband, it's just, he's find it much easier just to go full on in and love it and be totally happy and come home to a very happy home. But that's because I'm making it happy. So I'm helping him with that, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose when you were talking about the filming, I was thinking, actually, you and I had a similar lockdown in that there became a focus that kind of gave you something you were doing to connect with people. Yeah. So when you were doing the home cooking stuff, what role did that play in your lockdown on a sort of more day-to-day level?
It was a bit stressful. It was stressful because he was just so full on and he was really enthusiastic and he was treating it like it was like I was a producer and I was a camera woman and I knew everything. And there were so many times that I'd be crying and I'd go, I don't want to do this. And then he'd just go, right, get on, do it now. And I think, like, this is so not natural to me. But then it became part of the... Then it became quite fun. We got the kids involved and the daily routine, we got used to it. So, yeah, I quite enjoyed it, actually. It was all right in the end, but it was just messy and dirty and I was worried about the cleaning and the kids. I was just worried about everything and he wanted me to focus on this filming for, like, 2 hours in the morning and we had to do homeschooling, didn't we? We had to do so many other things. You know, it was all such a bonkers time.
So
I don't know
bonkers.
How we all came out of it pretty much normal.
I know. And actually, it's quite nice when you sort of can look back and there is at least a sort of... I mean, I'm sure this happened in lots of families in lots of different ways, but there's sort of like an angle. It's almost like you went here, it was like a sort of Dago version of how we cope with general stresses and strains in the house.
Yeah.
So for us, if, you know, we need to kind of flip the script or celebrate or de-stress, we'll put on music and jump around. And I guess That was all in our kitchen too, which is always the heart of the home. So I guess in a way, both of us had this thing of like, sort of, I don't know, putting a magnifying glass over something that's actually was already intrinsic to how you live. Although you had to do the camera work, which is the flip of things.
But just used to get his temper a bit. It just used to get so moody, and I thought, hang on a minute. And then he'd realise when I got upset that actually it's not my job. But it was good to be together, I suppose. I mean, that was the whole point of it, wasn't it? We were all together, and that was just the way it was. So, yeah. And you're right, it was all the only thing we used to do was to dance in the kitchen. That was the last ending. I'd go, right, it's time. And then just think, oh, God's sake. And then the old ones would come in and just do that and then walk off. But it was the only thing you could do. I think it was a lot of people's houses. For me, it was kitchen dancing, which is exactly what you did. It was exactly what we wanted to do at the end of the day. It was cleaning, getting everything ready for the next day, and then just having a bloody good laugh.
Yeah, so much cleaning. Oh, my goodness. The laundry, that was my other role. Is like, which actually I don't mind doing, but just seem to be eternal. And the bizarre satisfaction of when I get to the end of a basket.
Yeah.
And then obviously just starts again. No problem. I mean, you mentioned there when you were young and you were modelling. So presumably your girls were around the age. Is it right you went to Japan when you were a teenager?
Yeah. Did the classic kind of... The modelling kind of decade was kind of just normal. I kind of petered off as soon as I could get out, I did. But yeah, I was in Japan for 3 months, which I kind of hated. 17.
Oh, that's so little, Jules. It's a bit young, isn't it? When you look back, do you have a different view of it now that you've got kids around that age?
Yes, I think about my 17-year-old. I mean, she's probably quite... My number two probably would have been fine. But now I just think, you know, you're left, you're dumped in a small little flat. There was kind of cockroach in the fridge. In those days you weren't treated brilliant. So it was a bit kind of, I just can't believe I did it. I'm very pleased I did it. And it was what an experience, what an opportunity. But I would hate my girls to go through that. I would have just flown straight out and got them. But in those days, mum didn't have the money to do that. We had to stay our contract and that's all I thought I had to do.
But I spoke to Kat Deely the other day for something, and she... had done the same at 17. Yeah. She'd gone for 3 months to Japan. And she said, she looks back now and she said it was actually, she didn't have a particularly dramatic childhood, and she came from quite a small town. So for her, it was like, I can't believe I did that, actually. It's really bold to just go somewhere so different.
Yeah, completely. And kind of be stuck there, and you just have to, you know, you fend for yourself, really. And that's the way it was. It wasn't luxury or anything like you imagine, I'm sure, as you know. But yeah, it was an experience. I'm glad I've done it, because I wouldn't do it again. I'm not a great traveller, so I'm glad I've got those things out of the way.
Have you been back to Japan since then?
God, no. I said to Jamie last night, I will never, ever. He's like, you're such an idiot. Don't be so stupid. I said, I will never go back there again, just because I think I've done it now. And we just wasn't very nice. There was a couple of earthquakes. I just don't know. I couldn't see. I know it's an incredible country, but I couldn't. No.
That's interesting. He's just like, no, I've done that now. It's not like you went last year or something. It might have changed a little bit.
I think it definitely has. And I could probably go a little bit more stylish, probably go to some nice hotels, but, you know, no, I'm okay. You've done that.
Yeah. And so is that what you were doing when you had your first baby? Were you still modelling around that time?
No, I'd given up by then. I was working at the BBC, being a researcher and a runner, and that was way behind me.
And did you always want to be a mum? Is that always something that you had in your head?
Yeah, definitely. Once I'd found the right man, I thought, right, you know, it was in my... Ever since I was little, I had names in my head, and just the way I wanted the roses around the door and the cottage and the simple life, which I kind of got, which is amazing. Always. I didn't know mum of five particularly. I thought maybe like myself, like I'm one of three, I thought that'd be fine.
But yeah, that's fine. I'm family... one of three on my mum's side too.
Oh, are you? Yeah.
So what do you think it is about us that means we've got that thing where you just want to keep having... small people?
I don't know what it is. I love the small start. I love the beginnings. There's not one bit of that, actually. I mean, tantrums can do amiss, but they go away through anyway. So it's kind of stuck with those. But yeah, every aspect. I love everything they do at school. I love their singing voices. I love their plays. And I mean, there's so many things that drive you insane. There's so many bad things and difficult things, but there are also so many good things. I just feel a bit obsessed with it. I just really enjoy their company.
Yeah, and the busyness as well equally. That comes of family life. I find it quite an addictive thing. But I have to say, it's really nice to speak to someone who feels the same, because, a lot of people don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I get criticism sometimes as well. I mean, do you have those things where people say, be a bit sort of, I don't know, I think the most common one I get is to do with sort of planet overpopulation and how I'm being really...
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I ever say anything like, I'd love another one, oh, God forbid, I'm not only am I 47, I'm selfish, I'm old, and I'm, you know, I've got enough, and I get all those, but I just can't believe people even say things like that. Just, that's not the point. Just, the point is, I'm happy, and that's what I'm doing, and the kids are happy, and move on. I just can't see, you know.
Yeah, I think there's something weird that happens sometimes. It's always more about the other person when people have got a very strong opinion. And sometimes I've sat next to someone, I don't know, let's say a friend's invite me to dinner and I've ended up sat next to someone and they'll have quite a strong idea about, you know, the kids I have with. And I think, you'll never meet them. You'll never be invited round to mine. So why on earth does it matter? Like, what do you want me to say? And I'll just say it. And then you go home happy and I go home to my real life.
Yeah, yeah. Just drop it. Oh, just be kind and shut up.
I did see another thing that I said, it's what you said about how you'll be kind of relieved when the door is closed to the possibility. Yeah. And I totally understand that as well.
Yeah.
And obviously you've been brilliant about talking about miscarriage. And I'm so sorry you've been through that.
Thank you.
I grew up in a home where my mum was trying to have a baby, so a fourth baby, and actually ended up having 10 miscarriages. And she's spoken about that too.
Oh, right, yeah.
And she said that sometimes when people already have families, young children, they... people can be a bit more dismissive about the idea of having another, but actually you very much know what it is you're not having when you've already got a family.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, it's in your head, it's stuck there, and it's kind of, you know, you can't change it. I'd love to. I've even got some spiritual help to stop myself wanting this need, you know, this need that didn't work. So, you know, I know it'll come to a natural end, but then I'll think of something else and I'll say, what about, have you thought about adoption, Jamie? You know, there are plenty of other things I've thought about. I'm sure it will. I'm sure things will take over in life. You know, the way the world works, something will happen and we'll have to do something else. And, you know, this will be by the wayside. And I'm extremely happy with what I've got. We have to keep saying that because I have to add, but I'm very happy with what I have, which of course I am. But, you know, life's too short and I want to just push those boundaries and be even more happy.
Yeah, so. And I think it's funny, actually. It reminded me, I don't know if you were there, actually, but Jamie was doing a festival that I was at and he got talking to Richard, and I think at the time I just had maybe baby number 4 or maybe baby number 3, and I already had a glint in my eye about having another one, and Jamie was like asking us both, oh, how old are you? And then when I said, I think at the time, let's say I was 37, maybe I was, yeah, and he just turned to Richard and went, you're fucked, mate. She's got the same look. I recognize that look. But sometimes there's a sort of painting in there of like the sort of hapless husband, like Richard sort of almost plays the part of like, oh, look at all these kids that have kind of sprung up around me. But I don't really buy it.
Yeah.
I don't really buy it.
That's so funny. That's all Jamie's little like narrative for everything is, oh, I've got a lot of jewels in the mag. I think, oh, hang on a minute. You bloody love it. You're involved. You never said no. And, you know, it's all part of it. You love it. So shut up.
Yes.
I guess
something that is tricky for your family is, and you know, you've spoken about this before, so I hope you don't mind me asking about it, is you said you had one miscarriage that sounded like you nearly died.
Yeah,
that's a different atmosphere, isn't it, when it's medically serious like that.
Yeah, that was the second one. So I was kind of thinking the first one was bad enough, you know, the shock, but the second one was just... it was just explosive. And and Jamie was there the whole time and he did say, now we have to stop. And I went, no, I agree. And then within like the next day or so, I was, maybe we could just see what was wrong. We can double check, you know. And so we did it again, we kept doing it. But that's definitely given me, I hate that saying PTSD. I don't really know what it, because I want to make sure I say it in the right way, but it definitely has given me kind of, I will never get over it. So I can get over the other ones slightly. Probably never get over any of them, actually. And I don't think you're meant to. I don't think that's the way it's meant to go anyway. So, but it hasn't stopped me even in the throes of that to keep going.
Well, I suppose there's a shift in emphasis because if you're pregnant and the pregnancy doesn't happen, then you're focusing on that lane of traffic that you started to move into. And then you have to kind of quantify that with where you are. You know, outwardly nothing's changed, but something has.
Yeah.
But when you've had a trauma that affected your health and you do have a young family, then then it's got concentric circles that go beyond what might have been to actually, oh. And I think also, I don't know about you, but maybe up until then you hadn't really, I don't know if you've had good pregnancies, maybe you don't quite, you sort of feel like, oh, that I don't, you don't realise how fragile you can still be.
Yeah, exactly. I thought I was kind of, you know, doing brilliantly. You know, even after the first miscarriage, I thought, oh, that's just pretty standard. I think that probably was about to happen. But then when it kept happening, I just thought, hold on a minute, this is not the way. Then as I got older, everything was against me. I was thinking, oh, God, it's just all too much. I've got to learn to stop. Really, I think for my health, I'm quite pleased that we probably won't try again, because I just don't think it's a great... especially my older girls saying, Mum, please don't, because we just want you here. And I think, actually, I have to think about the others. It's not that necessary. So they're like, Mum, you should be a midwife this year. On New Year's Day, I got a text from my daughter Daisy saying, Mum, you've got so much to give. You're really kind. Just be a midwife. Like, don't try for anything else.
Oh, that's so sweet. What a lovely message.
Yeah, it was a really nice, it was a good New Year's message. A whole thing of how I've got to change my life and do things that make me really happy. And it's quite sweet, really.
Yeah, that is really sweet. And I know that when I was pregnant with my fifth, it all turned out all right when the baby was here. But initially, Sonny was my oldest. He was 14 at the time, and he was not digging that. He just said, you know, there's only two parents and there's so many of us already. And I think it was the first time one of them had sort of voiced, you know, concern for how they'd actually get access to you, really.
Yeah.
Because actually the teenagers need you so much. It's easier in that way.
Yeah. Oh, my five-year-old is, although slightly bonkers, it's much easier than, you know, my older girls. And they're both away in university, but I'm FaceTiming them probably seven times a day. Mum, even from how do you turn the dishwasher on to how do you, or boyfriend, you know, it goes on and on boyfriend issues. And it's kind of like, just let me have my lunch. Sometimes just switch my phone off. I think that's really bad parenting, but I can't talk anymore today.
No, I get that completely. I've got one child, my second one down, and I don't think he's not needy with me in an open way. It's more like I think he thinks I'm sort of his PA. So yeah, I've sometimes... I had it once where I was away for work. I was in Poland and I got a message from him and I picked up and he went, my bus isn't here. And I found myself going on City Map and saying, there's one coming in 2 minutes.
That is so funny. That's exactly what my daughter was going to say, Mum, I need the Opalex shampoo and conditioner. I think, you've got your own Amazon. Like, why am I continually given jobs? You know, you can walk down to Boots now. You're able to go. It's like you can go to the doctor. You can do everything. You know, then you'll need 20. But I find myself going, I'll just go online. Because we fix things. That's what we do.
Yes. And actually, I quite like that. I quite like problem solving.
Yeah. This is what our problem is, you see.
Come on. There's got to be a way out of this.
Yeah, exactly. So true.
Yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And with your big girls, about your teenagers, did you find... Sorry, have you got two teenagers or three?
Yeah, almost 13-year-olds, so say three, yeah.
Cool. And did you find the little ones were quite a good tonic? Because I think there's a nice relationship that comes out of that for teenagers when there's a new young person in the family and a baby.
I totally agree. Especially, well, now Petal's 13, so we all go on the school run together in the car, and I think although there's all the issues, if River does something funny... You know, then it's all back to like, oh, da, 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 and they all kind of bring back, they just feel a bit younger again, as opposed to sitting on their phones and stressing out. They've then got this kind of humour from River, or even if a fight happens, it's kind of, it brings it all back to normal. So, I definitely think you're right with you, and with yours as well, the same age, that they really focus, especially on lockdown as well. They had this little person to kind of annoy and be cute with. And they're definitely, I think it's a great thing, especially for older ones, to kind of bring it all back to normal.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they should have a sort of, I don't know, some way of interacting. Sort of toddlers and teens, that's kind of like a regular thing, I don't know, in schools or something, because I think there's something about the purity of the exchange that's actually really good for their heads. Non-judgmental, bit of being silly, bit of being responsible.
Yes.
It's quite nice.
I agree. Yeah, completely agree with you.
Yeah, I like that as well. So going back to your work, so, the podcast is called Spinning Plates, because in my head, that's kind of how I think of it sometimes. Is that something that you... Does that resonate with you, that idea?
Definitely. I think it's, well, we all say it. I always go, I'm so overwhelmed today. Or I'm, you know, that's not my thing. Or said to the children, I didn't do that because I've got too much going on. It's like, what do I always say? I think there's a saying, like, I'm not an octopus, or I don't juggle stuff. It's basically the same thing. It's too many spinning plates. But it's not like I've got loads going on. But for me, I'm quite kind of a perfectionist. So everything has to be done properly. And that's what takes the time, perhaps. But in our house, it always feels like that. Everyone's just trying to do everything all at once. And it's a bit overwhelming, but I think if it goes quiet, it's dead boring, isn't it?
I agree with that, but how does perfectionism go along a busy family life? I'm trying to picture how easy is that to achieve?
It's hard. It's really hard. Yeah. The house is immaculate, and it's kind of at the detriment of, you know, some things. So, you know, I make sure the beds are... Like, during lockdown, it was hell, because before schoolwork, it would have to be, right, we're going to do the house, clean it, and they'd be like, Mum, I've got to go online. I said, well, let me hoover behind you. So I have the... Yeah, it drives Jamie mad. I suppose it's an OCD, but it's just something that if things aren't right, then I then can't function with the rest of my stuff. And that's really important to me. I'd love to just drop it. Sometimes I think, I'm going to leave that there. I'm going to leave that sock there. And I walk away. I think, no, I'm going to go back to that sock. So it's very difficult. Can't bear it. So, it's quite tiring. It means I have to do... I'm always a bit late for things because things have to be right before I actually get in the car. But it's capable.
I'm actually really impressed by you by now. Because I've always thought in my head somewhere there lives a woman who has the same number of children as me and a lot of things going on like me, but she's actually just getting it all a little bit more right. And I think maybe it's been you.
I'm sorry, it's actually me. I am the best mum with five kids.
Exactly.
No, bloody I promise hell. You. No, because I fared in loads of other things. It's fine. I just managed to get a very tidy house, very good drawers. That's it.
Oh, I like that, though. I might not tell Richard about that. I'm very messy. So, okay, if there's lots going on and things are really, you know, they're full sort of kilter of, you know, the glory and the chaos of family life and work and everything, what are the things that you're first to kind of let slip? What are the things where you can go, okay, that doesn't matter?
Nothing really, it all gets done. I don't know.
Blimey!
It's all just perfect. No, I'll let slip, which is bad, probably the food. So the food was, so for example, I think, we're all going to have boiled eggs when they get home, particularly. Like, I won't worry so much about making the amazing gourmet dinner, which I plan to do. So the food will slip. And I think perhaps homework will go. I'm not too worried about, I don't focus so much on their academic studies. We haven't got really academic children. They're all a bit creative. So they all struggle slightly in different things. So I probably let that, during lockdown, we let that slip big time. I learned to write I did my left hand and just did stuff for them. Move out of the way, I'll do it for you, just get it done. Then we can go out and play. So I would let that slip and probably let my work slip. If I could, meant I could go for a walk, I'd just think, oh, I'll do that in a minute. And I definitely put my phone down and let all those emails and WhatsApp slip as well.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. And yeah, I think I completely on the same page with you, as having quite sort of creative kids, but for them, they don't all learn in a typical way. And I've found getting them through. I didn't really realise what school was like for those kids until I started raising them. And I just wondered if you found it quite stressful. I mean, you know, I could probably talk about that for a long time in itself, because I get quite sort of, I don't know, uppity about how education is such a sort of rigid format.
It's so wrong. Education is so wrong. And every, you know, the only thing that was good that came out of coronavirus, the fact that my daughter didn't have to sit her A-levels. She did, well, she did, but in a different way, constructive way, and it would just, it saved her. The stress of school is so unnecessary. I don't get school myself. I don't get how they teach. I don't understand the subjects they teach still. It just needs... Jamie and I once wanted to open a school years ago. We had this idea, but obviously it's not possible. But in our dream, you know, like the dream school, which I'm sure most parents would love, and it just slightly fits your child completely, but it would not be so focused on the way it is now, on this academic pressure. And these pointless exams, like you, I could just go mad. It just drives me mad.
Yeah, I'm the same. I feel like you just got to get on the other side with their morale intact, really, because the world is wide and full of really interesting people, and some of my favourite people to speak to about things, they haven't got many qualifications, and that school was not their place.
Always, yeah. But what a shame that we have to just get them through it. I feel like, mentally, just get them through it. But it's quite a lot of years to get them through, so it's kind of, you've got to find the right school, and there's no perfect school, but you do your best, and you just hope that there's lots of outdoor space. I just think, have you done any sport today? Anything that gets them out of thinking about all this education, because, you know, it is what it is. They'll be what they'll be, and it is what it is, and they'll try as hard as they can. But, you know, I mean, it's great if you're academically gifted. It's amazing. But if you're not, it's a bloody hard slog.
It is. And broadly, are your kids having a sort of similar upbringing to your own? Do you think it's quite similar?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, pretty similar. We now live in Essex, so they go to a school in Essex, which is a bit different to the one I went to, but, you know, similar. You know, I live 20 minutes from my sister and half an hour from my other sister, 20 minutes from my mum. So, my mum was an amazing mum, so whatever she did, I think I've done. And James' mum was also incredible, so we've kind of put those all together, and just a really basic kind of, you know, they have a touch with a really lovely childhood. It's just really simple. Hopefully nothing lovely, you know, touches them that especially about Jamie as well, seems to affect them, so it's fine. It's just very normal.
And do you think it's been something you've been conscious of, sort of keeping that kind of grounded aspect to what their actual day-to-day life?
Yeah, definitely. Not to mention, just always said, you know, just be humble. For God's sake, kids, be humble. If you're not humble, then we have failed as a parent. Just be kind, humble. I don't care what else goes on. I could have some manners as well. It would help. But, so that's why. And they're not really involved in anything Jamie does. He has his own office. They could have done loads of things, and we could have red carpeted out of hell and heaven and just had a great time. But we didn't, and I didn't. So I think the kids have followed my lead, and they also don't. So it's quite nice, really.
Yeah, I think it's healthy to have that perspective, really. And actually, from my point of view, the fact that my kids don't bat an eyelid about what I do for a living is actually really, I really like that. And I love the fact that when I come in through the door, it's all about what they're up to, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, you know, they're never going to ask me what my set list was, but they will ask me if I can remember the characters to, like, the films they're watching or the cartoons or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. They don't care if you've been with so-and-so and recorded the most mate, and you've been with some huge celebrity, because the kids don't care. Because Jamie go, I know him, and they go, oh, as if they said, of course you do. And I was like, gosh, you have no idea. Like, that's really amazing. But nah, to them, it's just zero interest. They are, well, anyway, by nature, teens are always a bit selfish anyway, so they don't really care what you've done all day. But, you know, they like to tell you what they've done.
I remember you saying earlier that you didn't really know you were going to have quite so many kids. So it wasn't like you thought, oh, I definitely want to have a huge family.
Yeah.
So what happened with me, I think, is I sort of had one, and it really knocked me for six, actually, like the life change and sort of adjusting. And then I actually waited quite a while, and it's almost like something that kind of gathered pace until I got to like baby number three. And on the day I had him, I was like, I want to have another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think that is? Do you think it's almost like the hormones or something?
I don't know. It's true. I did one. Well, I had the first one, like you. It was just, oh, wow, God, what the hell's this? And then Daisy was a little accident. She didn't, you know, we didn't intend to. So she came very quick. And then I was just thinking, then I needed a break. So, you know, I was so shocked. So we waited like 6 years. But it was like, it was gathering. It was underneath like the like bloody leaves and wind. And suddenly it was like, I think my sister said she announced she was pregnant. I thought, oh, that's it. It's time. I've got to get going. And then I did the same too, you know. But yeah, it's exactly like that. I didn't intend, I mean, I wanted to, but I felt I needed a breather. I needed to just kind of like lay down, and it took me 6 years to get over it, the shock of having two. It's just like, what?
We're so how close one. Are they? How close are your first two?
So they're a year, exactly a year.
Oh, that is quick.
It was really, I think I was 3 months, well, Poppy was 3 months, and I thought, I feel really sick. And I thought, no, literally. And I when I weed on the stick and I thought, oh God, no. I was really upset. I thought, what am I can't, I can't cope. But of course, then, you know, it gathers again and it all happens and it's absolutely fine. But it was a shock.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I haven't had any mine that close together, but yeah. And I think sometimes, you know, every time there's a new baby sort of in the offing, there's always a part of me that goes, have I just gambled? Have I just gambled with everything that our family life is about?
Yes, so
and
true.
I remember especially with my last one, when I found out I was pregnant, I actually thought, oh, golly, I've really done it now. Like, I thought I want another baby, but now it's actually possibly happening. And I phoned my mum and I said, I think I might have really mucked up. And she was really good because she just said, there's a reason why it takes 9 months, because it just gives you time just to kind of get your head around everything.
Yeah, yeah. I think definitely for three of mine, I've gone, oh, my God, oh, no, like, what have I done? The wanting and the needing, now I just feel selfish, I can't cope. But, you know, it always works out in the end. You do always manage to cope somehow.
You do, and I think the kids that come along, you feel like, oh, there was never ever going to be anyone else. Like, of course it's them. It's almost like the family just sort of shifts and adapts to have this extra person.
Of course, yeah.
But going back to, if you don't mind, you're being so brilliant about talking about the babies that you've lost. What's the reaction been from people that you've been so open?
I think pretty good. I mean, I don't know. Do you mean media-wise or just kind of friends?
No, more sort of, I suppose, just how things come to you, really.
Yeah.
I just think, personally, I think it's really brilliant because I think there was something you said, actually, that really touched me because you said about why don't we have any sort of aftercare for miscarriage?
Yeah.
Because women are almost expected to just sort of go home and deal with it.
And
why is it not that someone phones you up and says, hi, I'm your midwife and I'm just checking in and how are you feeling and how much blood today?
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a really, that's to me, that's a really huge logical thing that should happen and would probably shift the narrative as well.
I mean, I'm dying to campaign. Sometimes I have these ideas, but they don't get as typical, like everything else doesn't really happen. But I'm dying to get that to happen because I just don't, there's lots of, it's amazing now. The talk on miscarriage is incredible and everything everyone's doing is just amazing. But there are some things, I suppose, definitely in people's personal experiences, they then fight for that thing they need. But I just think that was, for all five of my miscarriages, the aftercare, and I was looked after brilliantly, was just, well, it just wasn't there. You know, it was there at the time and then obviously the weeks that passed. But I may not have nearly died had I been checked on daily as opposed to just kind of, right, come in and get your, you know, we'll get your D&C done, but leave me for 5 days. But you need to, you know, why was no one telling me, kind of asking me, helping me? And I just don't know why that isn't, you know, we have a health visitor, don't we? Oh, you
there? So it wasn't just a spontaneous thing. There was actually, you already knew you were, that was in the process. Is that right?
Yeah, so with the the second one, I'd been told that obviously there was no heartbeat to wait, and I wanted to do everything naturally. I thought, I'll wait, I'll take, you know, I'll do everything as it comes, and it just didn't come. So I carried on, but I shouldn't have. I kind of went to concerts, but no one didn't tell me. I thought if I take the kids to the park and walk up the hill, it will make it happen a bit more. But what they should have said is actually, for God's sake, don't go anywhere, because, you know, that's twice that I've put myself in danger by trying to do things, because I just felt, and it's, I don't think it's, it's not normal. It's not normal to have a dead fetus inside you and get up and do the school run. But we do, and millions of women do. And we go to my daughter's concert and try and go to my son, try to do everything, plan my kid's birthday party. And it was all too much. Probably it was all too much doing that anyway. Maybe some people do stop, but because no one told me that actually potentially this is, you know, also mentally, this is not, you shouldn't be doing this mentally. Yeah. So,
oh, God, I'm so sorry. And I think you're right. I think that is something that a lot of people just get on with, especially if you've got a young family.
Yeah,
we push through so many things when there's family life around us. And I've been very lucky. I have had one miscarriage, but it was very early. And I remember going to work and almost having this sort of, there's a sort of a horror to it, and also almost a fascination that this was all happening. And, you know, it was sort of simultaneously quite sort of loud and violent, but also so private. So I was thinking, this is so strange. My body's doing one thing and I'm having my picture taken. You know, it just was
I know.
Bizarre.
I think when you, if you could look back on them, you know, and you just think that, well, I kind of, when I did the podcast before about it with Zoe, you kind of think it's almost, well, it's not magical. That's not the right word. But I know the word, like, it's so powerful and it's so personal. And I said, I wouldn't change those things for the world. I don't think I'd go back. And obviously I'd love to have 10 babies and have those five that I had, but I don't know. And it made Jamie and I much stronger. The bond was so much more, you know, it brought us so close together. I don't know. It's just an experience that the club you don't want to join, but you have. And actually it's kind of wonderful as well. But I don't know why it's wonderful. I can't really explain it.
But. Yeah, well, I think for me, there was something about the unsentimentality of the process. I thought my body's just decided this doesn't work, so it's just gone. And it kind of made me, I don't know, I slightly respected that, I suppose. But maybe I was being a bit more analytical because I was really early on and I hadn't really had much time to think about it. I'd only...
Yeah.
No, I was pregnant for about 2 days. So maybe I was able to be a little bit detached in that way. But that's how I felt. I was like, wow, my body's just... When it's right, it just goes for it. And you could probably be pregnant for ages and not really know. And the baby, you know, I just feel like the fight for survival when it's right is really strong. And when there's question marks, your body can be equally as strong in saying that's not happening.
Yeah, exactly.
And I felt kind of divorced from it in a way because I realized that, people always encourage you to think you're in control about, how many babies you want, all this kind of thing. But that's just, it's just not
completely
not the truth.
No, you're not. Exactly. That's so true. You think you're in control. You're not at all. It's all in the hands of someone else. Nature, God, it's just there. And it's just, you know, and there's nothing you can do. Kind of, I feel that as I come to my journey of end, I think, well, that's probably, you know, a bit like it's all in the hands of, if it was meant to happen, it really would have happened. And I think, you know.
Yeah. In a way, it's better to have it be nature deciding for you rather than you kind of umming and ahhing about whether to leave the door open for it or not.
Yeah, no, completely true. Exactly. Yeah.
And now that you have got girls that are really, you know, into sort of adult territory, does it feel like you're still learning about how to mother that age group?
Oh, God, yeah. I think I'm still learning how to mother. Well, each child, is, as we know, is different. So River's very different. He's the most different child I've ever had. So I'm learning. He's like having a newborn all over. Well, he's like having a number one all over again. And then mix that with the teenagers and kind of trying to be a mother, being able to talk about sex and boys and be able to be really good about that and be open and trying to work out what kind of mother am I going to be? Am I going to be a little bit like this? Or am I going to say no alcohol? Or because ideally I want to say no alcohol, no sex, nothing. But I'm kind of learning that doesn't, it's not the way it works.
Make it more fun.
I know. So I have to be all cool and it's hard. And the girls know that I'm, you know, it's, and then of course then going back to your five-year-old and trying to kind of parent this new little person is, so different. Every one of them has been different and every one has been a lesson and continues to be a lesson to me, definitely.
Yeah, I feel the same. And do you feel like for the youngest one, can you sort of see how much they gain from having all those siblings around them?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a bad, I don't know how bad it is. It's like a sponge, because literally, I don't know if it's because they don't get heard. So they're very loud, very noisy, and they're kind of, he absorbs all the girls, what they say, and obviously, you know, swearing and good food. When number one, nothing bad happens, it's just perfect. And as you go down the line, you find that the kids may have said something like a swear word, and you think, oh, they've heard it from the 19-year-old who's on the phone.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my God, this is so bad, but I can't keep the house pure anymore, it's too late.
Oh God, that's so traumatizing. I remember screaming when my eldest swore. He didn't even swear it in use, he just said, I know what the F word is. And he was only about five. And I said, well, what is it? And he said it, and I went, and I screamed.
Yeah, because it doesn't sound right. My from a baby. Person.
Yeah, those days are gone.
Yeah, I know it's true. Yeah, now it's just anywhere and every time. But yeah, those sorts of things. I think number five. Paul, I don't know what number five has to go through, but it's either extremely fun or shocking, or it's just like a big sponge he absorbs every day.
Yeah, I think they become quite like a little bit like royalty, actually, because they sort of.
Yeah.
Can rule the roost, and they're always the little one. Everybody's pleased to see you.
Yes,
so there's a lot of sass in my smallest, I'd say.
A lot. Yes, yeah, it's the same. It is the same thing. It's because they've got that confidence as well, which the others don't seem to have, but he seems to have gained all their confidence and sucked it out of them. And then he's like, woohoo! When he walks in the room and everyone just goes, oh. Which is it's kind of annoying.
Yeah. And when you were saying about what next? I think, you know, you'll probably be like my mum and be angling for grandbabies. That'll be the next on the horizon.
I know. It is. That is so true. But I kind of, not quite yet. It stresses me out. But obviously it will be, I'm told, it's just a wonderful thing. So, well, I can see from my mum and you're sure from your mum, it is incredible for them. It's very exciting.
And are you close to your mum? I think you posted about her just the other day. Was it her birthday? Is that
She just turned 80. Very close. I mean, you know, I probably phone her 4 times a day. School run on the way home, before I have my coffee, school run on the way there, and then the night time. So she's like, hi, it's standard. I don't know why we're just very close. Well, all three of us are. Maybe growing up without our dad was made us much closer as a kind of, you know, as a force of women. But she's
so
amazing.
So this is you and your sister and your mum, is it?
Yes, 2 sisters, and mum.
And so I didn't realise you'd lost your dad. When was that? I'm sorry.
Well, it's actually, thank you, it was 1997, so it was a while back, and I was about 25. But he was ill for a long time, so my mum looked after him. He had a stroke, so he was ill for a long time. So the dad I had when I was up to the age of 7 is a different dad to the dad I have from 7 until 25. About 8 years old to this. So she kind of looked after him for a long time. So I've got so much respect and admiration. I just think she's incredible. So I hope that I've learned so much from her.
Sorry, I was a bit confused. So they had a stepdad as well?
No, sorry, that didn't explain it well. So, when he had his stroke when I was about 7 or 8.
Oh, I see, the dad you had.
So he changed, from being this dynamic, amazing city stockbroker to complete disabled on one side, not being able to talk, no work, you know, the whole thing. He wasn't the dad that I left the school in the morning for. Wow. So kind of everything changed. But my mum adapted to that and she kind of was just his total carer. But he lived with us until he died in 1997, but... you know, she was amazing. So we have relied on her so much. Now I feel like it's her time, even though she's 80, to kind of, you know, well, she deserves a lot, really.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt it. I mean, if you're still looking out towards politics and midwifery, I'm sure your mum must be quite a dynamic woman too.
Loads of plans.
There's still so much to be getting on with at 80, actually.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
But that's a big thing to grow up with your dad. I mean, how does that shape you, that experience?
Ooh. I don't know. I perhaps should have seeked some therapy over it. I don't know. It was brilliant. I mean, I was so proud of him, and after school he'd pick me up. Well, he'd kind of have to take his stick and hobble there. It'd take him an hour and a half, and I'd wait for him. He'd be late. It would be embarrassing because he'd be dribbling and he'd be paralysed on one side. And I'd take him to a coffee shop. And I don't think my children would be able to do that now. What I did with my dad, and I was so proud of him. Yet, kind of, you know, he really was very disabled, and we'd have our cup of tea together. He couldn't really talk, but we were very close. And then as I kind of got into my teenage years, obviously I became a selfish teen, and that was that. My mum had to, you know, my mum was at home with him. But we were just a very, very close family. But it was, it was so hard not having a dad, really, because we didn't. After he kind of had a stroke, that was kind of it. My mum lost her husband, we lost our dad. He was just kind of there, very importantly, but just there.
Yeah, so, and your mum, I suppose, had to keep him as present and as part of things in sort of both ways, if you like how he was, but also his character.
Which she desperately tried to do, and the nurses said he'd never walk again, and she of course got him walking, although it was with a stick. But and she wouldn't adapt the house because she said, no, we're not adapting the house, we're just going to do as we were, which meant she then have to like carry him up the stairs. But she just did, and it worked. And it was. We had a very happy, very, very happy childhood. Apart from that, she managed to shield us from anything. And I'm sure there was lots of horrible things she had to go through. But we were just happy going to school and doing our thing.
Wow. So, I imagine the older you get, the more significant that stuff is. Actually, that's actually amazing that she managed to keep that stability and keep you feeling like you're, you know, family. And that this is just where you were at. And the new reality was happening. And I mean, getting him walking again, that's incredible.
But
no wonder you phone your mum all the time.
Well, I think she was about 40. She was much younger than my dad, but I think she's about 45. And I think, God, that would be touch wood. That's like Jamie and I. That I can't think about it with young children. And then making sure that we didn't turn to drugs and drink and all the other things kids do, which we didn't. And I just think, how does she do that? That's why I just can't, you know, my admiration for her is too much. I just think, you were just incredible. Because as a mum, I think, God, that's your life gone. You know, that's your husband, that's it. So, but she managed to do it and she was incredible, so.
Yeah, she sounds amazing. So when you call her these 4 times a day, do you just sort of talk over everything?
Nothing.
Like, this is happening with that kid, I've got this project happening, is it just sort of an overview?
yeah, sometimes we'll go for an hour about in depths of River and, you know, the host character and what did this, that and the other. And, you know, and then we'll go into like Daisy and what she's doing and how amazing. And that, then we'll just there, or there'll be really quick conversations like dinner, food, dog walk, see you later, bye. So
this is very familiar. I'm like that with my mum, actually.
Oh, are you?
She's the person, I don't think I do anything without asking my mum about it. Like, I have to know that she's okay with stuff.
Really? That's so funny. It's exactly the same. I really respect what she says. And if she didn't like anything, I just don't think I could probably do it.
So what does she think about when you were, like, with your family life? Like, how does she... Because it's funny, isn't it, when you take a lot from your childhood, but then you end up having a bigger family than you came from.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I think she was like, oh, you boo, which is my nickname. You're not going to still keep going, are you? I said, well, yeah, I might do, I might not. And then my sister, one's got three children, one's got two. So it's the on-standing joke, I suppose, you know what it's like. Oh, God, you're not going to keep going on. Oh, wow, God, you've got a massive family. You've got 5 billion kids. But no, she's loved every minute. For her, it's brilliant because she just keeps getting little babies. So for her, it's been amazing.
Well, that's lovely. And it means that if your family follows suit and mine, then we're going to end up with...
Can you imagine Christmas?
Like 25 grandbabies.
That's exactly why I moved house. I said to Jamie, we've got boyfriends and we've got kids, and like we need to be somewhere quite big.
Oh my God. You know what? I'll put a date in the diary now so I can talk to you for the podcast I do about grandparenting.
Oh, really? Oh, God, Jay, get me in. I love it.
Oh, Jules, thanks so much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks,
I could have spoken to you for hours. I feel like, I mean, it's just so nice to talk to someone where there's so much overlap. You know, it's really lovely.
Well, you know what? So, we should get our kids together. Five kids to get 10 kids in one room and a nice roast dinner. You can do some dancing.
That sounds like I think we only get invited to people's houses if they've actually got sort of approximately the same number of children. So, yeah, I'm
so
free.
True.
Free every weekend.
Perfect. Brilliant. I'll put in the diary.
That was Jules Oliver, who I really enjoyed chatting to. You could probably tell I was thinking, you know, we could have kept talking for a lot longer. I felt like there was a lot more stuff we could continue chatting about. And I especially loved hearing about her dad, actually. I thought that was really affectionate and affecting and, you know, I'm sure a very significant part of her childhood. And doesn't her mum sound amazing? Anyway, so that was a really lovely way to start off Series 7. And as ever, you know what I'm going to say probably, but I love hearing your suggestions. I have often interviewed people that I never would have thought of purely because someone's put a message in the comments and I've sort of done a little bit of looking up and thought, oh yes, good shout with that. And I've already got some very interesting people. I've already recorded everyone from someone who spends their days doing postmortems to someone who spends their days doing hula hooping on roller skates. So, you know, you can't say it's not varied. And what else is going on? Oh, actually, this weekend. Okay, it's going to be really lovely, but we've got two quite significant... So April around here is silly season anyway, because it's Richard's birthday on the 6th, it's my birthday on the 10th, his dad's on the 5th, his mum's on the 11th. Our nanny is on the 21st, our old nanny Claire, she's the 8th. She's like families, we always celebrate that too. My eldest is going to be 18 tomorrow, so that's the 23rd. And on Monday, the 25th, there's going to be another birthday, which is Ray. He's going to be 10. So Richard is also away all weekend except Sunday. So I am organising bits and bobs for birthdays, and it'll be really lovely when it's happening. But right now I'm in that slightly like tizzy bit where I realise there's lots of things I've kind of left quite last minute. I don't know if you're the same as me, but I always feel like I've got this really long run-up and I think it'll be fine, I'll organise it. And then before I know it, it's kind of day before. Maybe I'm just one of those people who's a bit last minute. I mean, it does all kind of seem to just about hang together, but there's definitely a just about element in there. And don't tell him, but I'm getting Ray a hamster. Any thoughts? Is that a good idea? And don't worry, I do know really that the only way you could tell him and ruin it is if you went back in time, because by the time you hear this, he's already got a hamster, but still, right now it's a secret. And it looks like a very nice little hamster. I've reserved him. I actually got him a reduced rate because he was from a litter and no one bought him. So he's kind of like the most senior hamster in the shop. But he's very cute. We've been to visit him already. And I haven't told Ray directly he's getting him, but I think he's got a good idea. Anyway, it should be fun. New member of the family, incoming, small Syrian hamster.
I will let you know how that all goes when I speak to you next week. But in the meantime, really good to be with you again. Thank you so much. You know I love doing this. And I will see you in a week. All right, lots of love. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.